Welcome to the latest Motor One-on-One interview. I'm your host, MotorOne.com Global Editor-in-Chief John Neff. I've known today's guest for almost as long as I've been an automotive journalist. We met early on in our careers, but his was not a career writing about cars. Meet Patrick Colello, the founder, chief designer, and former owner of Automoblox, the toy car company that sold beautifully designed, heirloom-quality toy cars that were as fun to play with as they were to look at. Patrick, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me, John.
You know, I have known you almost longer than anyone I've known in this industry. And it's funny because you're kind of industry adjacent. You're not an automotive journalist. We met a very long time ago because you started Automoblox, which, as I mentioned, was this, you know, incredible toy car company that made these beautiful wooden toys that were creative and you could pull them apart and mix and match them. And I don't even remember. Do you remember when we met and how?
Well, early on in Automoblox, I realized that the automotive press really took a liking to Automoblox. So I must have been at a point where I had some reach to the motoring press. I think you and I just got on well, and you really liked the product, and you became a big fan. And I think that's probably how it happened. If I had to guess, it'd probably be like 2005 or six, maybe.
That sounds right to me.
Yeah.
I think we hit it off because you started Automoblox and I joined Autoblog really early on. And it kind of felt like our two businesses grew together,
like
kind of at the same pace, and we helped each other a lot. I'll also say that anyone who knows me, and this is true to this day, I love toys. I love the intersection between toys and cars. I love any toy that's car related. So whether it's RC cars or models or things like that. And I just had never seen anything like Automoblox when we first met. So of course I wanted to write about it. So we wrote about it on Autoblog, and it was a hit, and you kept in touch with me every time you had a new model or something new to share. We would write about it, and as much as it helped you, I remember back in those days, you sent me a lot of the toy cars to use as giveaways. So we would be doing giveaways on Autoblog and giving away Automoblox cars to people, and they loved them. And so, yeah, our companies kind of grew at the same time and the same pace. And so I always felt a kinship with you and was super happy to keep promoting Automoblox. Now, when did Automoblox start?
The idea for Automoblox goes all the way back to my college days, way back in the 90s. Started working on it as a company right around 99, 2000. We launched some really horrible quality products in 2004 and worked out the kinks. And we started selling proper products in 2005. And I remember Roger Hart from Auto Week was the first person to ever reach out to me. I think he saw an ad that we placed in a toy magazine, and he said, send me some samples. We want to review them. And at that point, I didn't have samples I wanted to show anybody. So it wasn't until a year later that I had something of quality and sent them to Roger. And he wrote like a half page piece on Automoblox. And it was at that point I got to appreciate the power of the press. And
what was the effect of that first write up?
Oh, we sailed. Boom. It was like, money. people called and placed orders. It was really great. And I don't remember what we ordered, but how much was sold, but I remember it being significant. And at that point I'm like, I think I'm going to be a PR guy. And I started really focusing on the automotive press. And quite frankly, I looked at Automoblox as a car company for kids. I'm a car enthusiast.
I like that. Yeah.
Not necessarily a toy guy. I had what I thought was a great idea, something that resonated with kids and adults. And so I probably aligned myself way more with the automotive industry and the automotive publications and journalists than I did with anything in the toy industry.
I think you're great at PR, but your background is so varied because you were, not only were you the owner and founder of Automoblox, you were the designer as well. Wasn't that part of your background too? What was your schooling in?
So I studied industrial design, a bit of graphic design and business. I think I always knew I wanted to be in business and be an entrepreneur. And I think it takes a certain kind of person to be an entrepreneur.
Sure.
I'm certainly not the first one that said that, but it's a certain kind of person for sure. I mean, this was an idea, you know, it started out as a college project, and I went to Carnegie Mellon, and Carnegie Mellon had a psychology department, and part of really the impetus of Automoblocks was to teach kids creative thinking. And I wanted to make sure that my products had that built into them. And I worked very hard at creating not just a car, but a puzzle system that really challenged kids in a cognitive way. And I initially started with the psychology department at Carnegie Mellon, which had a preschool that had like a one-way mirror and stuff. So I don't know what they were doing with these kids when I wasn't there, but they allowed me to go in and give the kids some toy samples that were, you know, just very crude models. And it was the response that I got from these, you know, 4-year-olds on very crude models and how positive it was. I was like, wow, maybe there's something here. And it wasn't until, you know, 7 or 8 years later that I wound up doing something. But I was fascinated by the response. So I'm a trained product designer, and I've always had a kind of a business mind. And Automoblocks really became almost like a real world MBA. In order to take a product and turn it into a company and a business, is certainly quite an effort.
And I remember you telling me other parts of the business, like, you know, there's manufacturing, there's quality control, there's, you know, when you become an entrepreneur, you're suddenly the chair of 8 different departments in your little company as it's growing. What was that like as Automoblocks grew from, you know, a few products to a whole? I mean, how many different vehicles were you selling by the end, or different SKUs? Like dozens, right?
I think the most we had was somewhere in the mid-30s.
Yeah.
At some point, you rationalize and pare down, but that's something you learn, you know, managing inventory and all those kinds of things. But no, it's very interesting doing all the jobs, right? I think to be an entrepreneur, you need to be good at a lot of things, great at a few, but good at most things. Kind of like everything, right?
Right.
So, yeah, I mean, you got to like just basically take your hat off and put a different hat on. You could be the supply chain guy 1 minute, the marketing guy another minute, the designer another minute, the CEO another minute, you know, working with, you know, securing financing to negotiating contracts and vetting suppliers. Like those are all kind of normal things that go on in the day in life of an entrepreneur. And of course, as you grow, you can hire people in each of those different disciplines to make your life easier, and in the end, make a better company and a better product.
Yeah, but somebody's got to do it first, and it's usually the guy who started it, right?
One of my favorite things, at one point, my desk was literally in my bedroom. So if I forgot to put my computer on to sleep, I'd get chimes, you know, email would be chiming all night long. And, you know, sometimes a commute can be a little bit too short, right?
To go from the bed to the... Believe me, I know. I work from home as well.
So that's definitely a challenge. And, you know, I'm doing business with Europe, with Asia. So you could work all day long. And a lot of times that wound up happening. But I remember one time getting a call. I remember sitting at my desk, and I had a baby at the time, and answering the call, and the baby's crying in the background. And I told the caller, I said, don't mind the baby. We're doing focus groups today. I mean, it's just like, you just kind of roll with what you have.
Great cover. Yeah.
And, like that. Yeah. And just do what you got to do to get the job done.
You know, you mentioned that you looked at Automoblocks like a car company for kids. One of my favorite things that you and I did together was you came to me when you had a new model you were launching, and you wanted to make it like it was a real car and pretend like we took spy shots of it.
Yeah.
So you fed me these, like, you know, these spy shots of a little toy car, and we ran them like normal spy shots, and we did it like totally straight, like this was, you know, like a GM spy shot or something like that. I loved that kind of creativity. That was really cool.
Love that. So other people have done it since then, and I just, in the toy industry, as a kid, like my favorite part of the magazine was always the beginning and looking at the spy shots and the futuristic cars. Like that was my thing.
Dude, have we talked about that before? Because I on this podcast, I have literally said those exact same words.
I would try to figure out like my dream job at one point in my life was I want to be the guy that disguises the cars. Like that would be like my dream job. It's like, how much cladding do I put on? What kind of wrap? Like, and you think about it, it's got to create buffeting and wind noise, and it's going to wreck the fuel economy and the drag. So, you know, that's like my favorite thing is future cars. And I think it goes back to, I remember being a little boy. I think my dad became an automotive enthusiast when he got a brand new 1976 BMW 2002, which of course was a beautiful car to drive back then. And obviously a groundbreaking automobile. And I remember him taking me to auto shows as a child and looking at these cars on the turnstile, these futuristic concept cars. Probably, if I had to guess, I'd probably say in the late 70s, early 80s. Mm-hmm. And I remember tugging on my dad's shirt. I'm like, Dad, why can't they make this car now? And that was always my fascination. And when I went to college, I remember being in the library and discovering this magazine called Car Styling, and just my mind being blown, like absolutely being blown. I'm sure you've seen that publication, and just looking at all these concept cars and learning about the design development and looking at prototypes and drawings and clay models. And that just totally blew my mind. And at that point, I was like, I'm going to be a car designer. I'm going to Art Center and I'm going to be a car designer.
Man, I totally wanted to be a car designer growing up too. And I had designs on it going into high school and it didn't work out. I always tell a story that ends up blaming my art teacher in high school, even though it's probably not really his fault. But I was the same way. I thought car design was the coolest thing. And my story is I remember going to, I think it was the 1985 auto show in Cleveland. And the new 1986 Ford Taurus had debuted.
And it was like a spaceship.
The spaceship. And it was like the most futuristic thing I'd ever seen. And I became enamored with it. And I think that's why the 91 Taurus SHO has become like, that's my, like one of my favorite cars of all time. But I just remember that car. It didn't look like any other car. It looked so ahead of its time. And that kind of like, you know, put me down that path. And then I remember watching an episode of Quantum Leap. Scott Bakula leaped into the body of a secretary of a car designer.
But
in this episode, you got to see like a car design office in an automaker in like the 60s. And I thought I'm like, oh my God, it's a real job. It's a real job. And amazing. I immediately wanted to be it. So, it didn't work out. But you got to design cars. You got
I looked at it like I was designing real cars, right? And you know, I think the beauty of Automoblocks is really the simplicity of it. And I think it's very, you can look at cars on the road today. It's very easy for a designer to be heavy handed.
Sure.
So
that's what the Automoblocks cars you designed were. They were like so I remember you had a coupe, a sedan, an SUV, but they were like the essence of each of those vehicle types,
precisely. So at one point I called them concept cars for kids. I basically created automotive categories, and I just wanted to create the essence of
that vehicle type,
the wheelbase, the height, the silhouette of that category. So it was very simple. There was very minimal adornment on the actual body of the vehicle. So it was a very simple, clean, elegant, very little detail to the shape, to the wooden body. All the detail was put in the wheels, the tire treads.
Yes.
And then later the Brembo brakes.
That was a great partnership you had near the end of your run with Automoblocks, the Brembo brakes.
Oh my God.
Just the perfect amount of realism and to make it feel like a real car, to have like a real part that you can see on actual cars was a nice touch.
Yeah. So it was just the juxtaposition of that reality against that very, very clean, basic, conceptual, minimalist. So I think it's the contrast of not only the materials and the colors, but the design approach, right, to those details and to that very simplistic body. I think that's part of what made the aesthetic so dynamic.
I like the colors too. I don't think you should pass over that so quickly, because unlike most people, you know, kids probably played with their Automoblocks. I did not play with them. Mine were for display. And I will put some pictures of my last home office where I had them all on display. You've sent me a lot of them over the years. And I had the entire rainbow of the mini Automoblocks, probably like 15 to 20 of them all in rainbow order. And I had them displayed around my office in various places. Some of the larger ones, you had a hot rod series, that I had the big and the little one for each.
Oh, wow.
And those were great too. So my office was Automoblocks HQ for many, many years.
I used to call them. Sometimes I'd call the it was like candy for the brain, because it was like they had these candy colors and you really wanted to touch them and reach out to them. And yeah. It's one of those deals that it's almost like giving kids broccoli that tastes delicious. So it's just it was good for them, but they didn't realize it was good for them, right?
My nieces and nephews would come visit me, I would either close my office door, because that's what they are. They're candy. The colors of them like draw kids in. I would either close my office door and not let them in, or if they walked in, like I would have to be with them, and their parents understood, like, you know, Uncle John's toys aren't for playing, they're for looking. And so I would like monitor them. So I probably treated them not in the way you meant them to be treated.
John, you should have called me. I would have given you a whole box just for the kids, a little play box.
I think, you know what? I'm sure I passed them along to them at some point, because I know I got them for birthday gifts for them as well. And for me, I got to tell you, for me, I've probably gifted more than half of my collection away, especially the large ones. I often... Like I remember later days on Autoblog, we had redesigned the site. It was like the fourth redesign of the site, and it was a really hard project, many months long. And I brought down six of the full size Autoblogs and gave them away as gifts to the developers and the project managers who worked on it. So I've often used them as like gifts for people, adults, you know, just like here. And I think people know they're friends of mine if they've received an Audible blocks from me.
Oh, that's cool. That's awesome.
Leading to the end of your tenure with Automoblocks and my tenure with Autoblog, something really interesting and cool happened when I left Autoblog, which was around 2014. And I had left a lot of great colleagues and friends at Autoblog, and some of them got in contact with you to kind of, you know, get me a going away present. Can you talk a little bit about how that went down and what resulted from it?
Do you remember what was the guy's name who
Chris Paukert probably contacted
Chris Paukert contacted me, and he said, you know, John's leaving Autoblog. We want to give him a special going away gift. Is there something special that you have? And I started thinking about it. And what I wound up doing, really wanted to create something super special, like a one-off handmade. In the end, it was kind of expensive, but I'm so glad I did it. So I decided to, Autoblog's bodies are made of wood, but I decided to do a billet aluminum bodied car that had that in essence replaced the wood with aluminum and had it highly polished, and it probably weighs like a ton, and then put all the plastic Automoblox parts in it. And I think that car even had the prototype Brembo brakes, yes?
I'll have to check. I'll put pictures of it on the website and in the show notes of this episode, and we'll see.
Yes.
I don't remember them off the top of my head with the Brembo brakes. I remember some of the later ones you sent me after that had the Brembos.
Maybe I wanted to do it and couldn't figure out how to do it. But I think the request came in a transition period when we were refreshing the line. And one of the things we added to the new models was Brembo brakes and HRE wheels, and I think I wanted to sort of incorporate those if I could. I think there was some kind of...
Well, and let me explain the amount of... I don't know firsthand, but the amount of time and effort, and like you said, probably money that went into this is incredible, because it took, I think, over a year for you to create.
I think the problem we had was the finish, because I wanted the polished
right, aluminum. The polished finish.
And I think something happened with the finish, and I had to take it out to like an automotive polisher that finally got it correct.
Wow.
Because I had a couple places that, no, we don't want to touch it, I can't do it. So I found some guy in Long Island, I think, that wound up polishing it and getting the finish just right. I think, are the wheels aluminum too? I think the wheels are aluminum too.
I'm not sure. I'll check and put those in the show notes if they are. I will say the body is extremely heavy. I mean, it is like a solid ingot of aluminum, but still able to be pulled apart in the three sections like any Automoblox. It weighs a ton.
It's gorgeous. I wish I had one.
It is. You should have made two. And keep in mind, I leave Autoblog, and Chris tells me like, oh, we got you a gift, but and Patrick's helping us with it, but it's being worked on. So almost like about a year later, I've completely forgotten about this. And in the mail, I get this box that, again, weighs a ton. And I pulled this out. You made an acrylic display case for it as well.
Oh, did I? So, oh, my gosh. That's
yes,
awesome.
It is. And I got to say, again, I'll show pictures of my last home office that I had totally decorated and stuff. It is like the crown jewel of the office. It is. Everything is like built up to it. And it had a place of honor. And it still does. I mean, it's literally the best gift I've ever gotten. And the coolest thing I think I own, and I'm excited to actually talk about it and share it, because I don't think I've ever really shared this. Really, this cool. I haven't talked about it much, certainly not like publicly. So it'd be kind of cool to show people this amazing thing. And yeah, it 10 pounds maybe, like it it is seriously solid, like I said, like a silver ingot. But yeah, so that's when I left Autoblog. And then your tenure with Autoblogs eventually came to an end to about a couple years ago, maybe?
Yeah, it was the summer of 16.
So you eventually sold Autoblogs to another company and moved on to kind of your next project, right?
Yeah.
So tell us a little bit about that. It's called Honda Vintage Culture.
Yeah, so I am obviously a huge automotive enthusiast and also a huge Honda enthusiast. And I over the years, I gained many friends in the industry, and some of the folks, that I became friends with were the people in the licensing department at American Honda. And so we were talking about some ideas, and I said, I really love to do like an enthusiast, a premium enthusiast line for Honda. I feel like it's something they don't have. And one thing led to another. And after a long gestation period, we negotiated a contract. And I launched a line of vintage-inspired apparel that celebrates the innovative soul of Honda Motor and its motorsports excellence. And I feel like since Honda is such a successful mass-market brand, not enough people really know about how special they really are from a innovation and really racing from the racing side. So I'm using this format of apparel to kind of educate people on how and why Honda is so special.
You know, I didn't know how, like, of course I knew Honda has been in motorsport a long time, but you came to me at some point and asked me about photos from the history of Honda's racing. And it just so happens that the company that owns Motor One, Motorsport Network, also has a very large archive of motorsport photography. And through that, we were able to find you some photos of, I think it was Honda's F1 like pit crew team, like way back in the day. I don't even know what year it was.
Yeah. So some of the first items I produced were jackets that were inspired by Honda pit uniforms from the middle and late 1960s. And if you think about the context of a Japanese manufacturer going to Europe in the 60s and competing at the highest level of motorsports, competing with Ferrari and Maserati and what else? You had Lotus probably at that time. Damn. And then just going there with a bunch of Japanese guys like show up and try to get this car on the track and compete. I mean, it's an unbelievable story. I think it's a testament to Mr. Honda's vision, his courage and his kind of like not afraid to do anything attitude. And this guy loved racing, and it was such a big deal. And I think within 14 or 15 months, they won their first Grand Prix, which was just unreal.
That's amazing. So your website for this is at vintageculturestyle.com.
Uh-huh.
And that's where people can check out this full line of apparel. That's there's a lot of great t-shirts, but also some really cool jackets. And of course, you know, like always, you sent me some samples, and I love them. And in particular, there's one of the jackets. It's a kind of a gray jacket. It's labeled as Honda Motor Zipper Jacket on the website. It's $65, which I find incredibly reasonable for how much I have liked this jacket. And let me tell you, I have, so when I'm wearing it out, it's a light, like spring or fall jacket. And the most recent time I was actually in New York City on vacation with my family, and I got stopped on the street where usually it was like young guys who would like just say, "Hey, nice jacket." like I am not someone known for my apparel or my wardrobe. So this to me is an extremely shocking experience to have somebody compliment me on what I'm wearing.
Great story. It's funny.
Yeah. And what I really like about it, and again, I don't know clothes from one thing or another, but the shoulders, and this is such a weird thing to notice, just the shoulders are like really well cut. And they have this, I don't know, just kind of weight of making my shoulders look bigger than they are, but it's just a really good cut.
So all the, you know, we're not just sticking logos on stuff and, you know, just
exactly.
Stuff,
yeah.
We're all the stuff that we produce is bespoke. So that's, you know, I'm picking the fabrics and the cuts and the sizing and it's all, you know, it's got our own branding. It's every detail is designed from the zipper pulls to the woven labels. It's not something that, you know, other brands do this, but I think, in the automotive space, it's not as common. You know, you have it at, you know, at BMW and Porsche, but you don't usually have it at a brand like Honda. But quite frankly, I would challenge any other automotive brand that has, I don't think anybody has a history that could rival Honda Motor, with what they've done in motorsports. I mean, I don't think there's any other company that makes jets, robots, and Formula One cars.
And lawnmowers and generators and it's amazing.
It's absolutely staggering. And the quality, the innovation, I generally collect Honda products that tend to be sports cars, but you know, through the course of their history, they've made some outstanding class leading sports cars that are now automotive icons and not even arguably are some of the best cars ever made, that are on lists of some of the best cars ever made, which is pretty exciting.
What are some of the Hondas you've owned?
So I've actually owned, if you count them all up, I think I'm on number 30 something Honda.
Oh my God. So don't go through the whole list.
Yeah. So
what are the highlights?
It's been quite a few. So my very first car was a 1988 CRX that I had new. And quite frankly, it was that car that made me fall in love with the brand.
Is that the car on the t-shirts? Cause I noticed your two newest t-shirts, are based on the CRX from 88.
Yeah, so I'm going back to 88, and
that's nice.
One of the reasons why that's like the first car model shirt I've made. I've gone back to 88 because for me that's where it all started, and that car was very special. It was a great value, great performance car, and once again, it was a car that kind of appealed to a broad base of people, and I think brought new people into the brand because it was sporty, stylish, innovative, great value, and fuel efficient, and an engineering marvel with a double wishbone suspension. I'm trying to think what other great innovations, but the car was just phenomenal. So that car kind of hooked me into the brand. But so to this day, I own five Honda models today. I own, and most of them I've owned a very long time. I have a Acura NSX that I've owned for 20 years.
Wow.
So I have a Honda S2000, a 2001 Honda S2000 I've owned for 11 years. I have a Honda CRX that's highly modified. It's crazy modified. I always wanted to do sort of a tuner car, but in a tasteful Colello style.
Is that the white one on the homepage of the Vintage Culture Style website? Yeah. 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 So, that's very, it's classic, man. It's very tasteful.
It's very clean. It's radical modifications, but it's super clean. You wouldn't really know it. It's got a Mugen body kit, which is like the holy grail of aftermarket parts. I think beat up used ones go for $8,000 now.
Wow.
So that's a great car. I have also the other holy grail. I have a 1997 Acura Integra Type R.
Oh, very nice. Jeez.
Of which they made like 300 or so that year. And I've just completed a full, I'll call it an underbody restoration. So I've replaced every nut and bolt under the car, repowder coated suspension, brakes. New bushings all around, detailed the engine bay, and car is just a phenomenal, super clean, wonderful car. And then I have an everyday driver, which is a 2018 Civic Type R.
Wow. That is, I mean, you've proven your Honda enthusiast credentials. That is, I mean, that's the highlight of the brand over the last 30 years, really.
All those cars wouldn't exist if Honda didn't have that motorsport soul, the soul of innovation, that, you know, the Honda rotates engineers through their Formula One program so they can learn. So it's really a teaching tool for them as well. Mm-hmm. So without racing, there is no Honda and there are no great sports cars. So that's what's exciting. And that's why motorsports is, Honda Motorsports, I think, is so exciting. Obviously, the U.S., we do a lot of things in the U.S. too, which are also very exciting. I particularly am a crazy Formula One fan, so Honda having just won their first Grand Prix in 13 years is super exciting, and it's certainly on the right track to doing some great things with Red Bull.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. So that leads me into your what's next for you. The vintage culture seems to be going well. You're coming out with new apparel and expanding the line. Are you going to keep going with this for a while? Do you have something on the horizon if you're able to talk about it?
Yeah, so I think with vintage culture, there's a lot. Hans and I are actually looking to work even closer together. I think there's a lot of great things we can do. You know, part of everything I'm doing with vintage culture, I'm doing with the intent of obviously creating a successful brand for myself, but also helping Honda almost from an image and marketing standpoint. I wanted to look favorably upon them and to sort of open people's eyes up to really how special this brand is. So a lot of the things I'll be doing in the future with vintage culture is going to be underscoring all the different facets of the Honda business and why they're so successful. So I think we definitely have some legs here. I'm also working on a project that's outside of automotive and outside of design. It's an entertainment property, which is very different, but it's very innovative. And I think really the essence of, I believe, some of my core strengths are really, you know, innovation. And I think this project's certainly very challenging and pretty exciting. So hopefully you'll be learning about it in the coming years.
Great. I will, of course, be eager to hear. And I want to thank you for being on the podcast with me and having this great conversation. We've been friends for a long time, and I'm sure we will for a long time into the future. So thanks for having this talk with me.
I appreciate it, John. Thanks so much for having me.
Of course. And if you guys want to follow Patrick and Vintage Culture, you can find him on Instagram at Honda Vintage Culture. So go ahead and follow him there. And of course, if you like the Motor One podcast, we have new episodes coming out every Friday. And you can find us on iTunes and Google Play and anywhere where you find your podcast to listen to. All right. Thanks, everybody, for listening. And we'll talk to you next time.